Welcome to the Make Me a Pro podcast with your host, Charity Menday.
Hi, guys, and welcome to the Make Me a Pro podcast. This is season 2, episode 6. In last week's episode, we looked at mentorship, what makes a great mentor, and how to be an excellent mentee. Well, I'm excited to be building on that today with a second installment. We're going to be looking at the issue of sponsorship. Now, my guest today is phenomenal, to say the least. Not only does she juggle a senior role in one of the largest investment management firms globally, she also serves as the vice president of one of the most established corporate women's networks for the banking and financial services sector in Europe. Melanie Seymour, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Charity. Thank you so much for having me. And I'm honoured to be able to be part of your series, which I've been following with great excitement. So it's really great to be part of it.
Thank you, Melanie. So for those who don't know, tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do in your day job, and how you got into it.
Okay, then. So I am Melanie Seymour. I am a managing director at BlackRock, and I run our UK defined contributions pensions business, which is two offices, one based in London and one based in Peterborough, which is a bit strange for a city office. I won't give you chapter and verse on how I got here, because that honestly could be a podcast all of its own, because it's not your normal route.
Okay.
But I run a business within BlackRock, and that has been my history, whether that's been through being employed or being self-employed. I've always run businesses of one kind or another. Mm-hmm. So have that entrepreneurial gene that doesn't ever go away. Mm-hmm. But that's my day job, which I do. But my real passion is, how do we ensure we develop and nurture that next generation of leaders? Mm-hmm. So as part of that, I am Vice President of Women in Banking and Finance, and do a lot of work around how we can really, really make a difference to the industry as a whole, but bigger than that, and what more I can do personally to help.
Oh, wow. Sounds like a handful there.
If you need something done, always ask a busy person.
Of course. So tell us a little bit about mentoring, because I know you've been in the game for some time, and you mentor people, but also you speak a lot about, you know, the next generation. So what makes a good mentor?
I always say a good mentor is a critical friend. And what I mean by that is they're encouraging, they're supportive, and they're there to help. But they also provide real, honest, and often feedback that you may not get from someone else. Mm-hmm. And may at times be uncomfortable, not necessarily what you want to hear. Mm-hmm. As a mentor, you have to be willing to speak truthfully, but be very constructive about the things you're seeing, your experiences. And often these are quite emotional issues that people have and need to deal with. And it's trying to take that emotion out and use your own experience and knowledge to, how can you help people through it? It isn't about the telling. You're not there to, somebody's come and ask you a question and you give them the answer. You're trying to get your mentees to find the answers themselves.
Okay. And as a mentee, what makes a mentee exceptional in your eyes?
The most exceptional mentees I've ever had are those that are totally willing to come to the table with, to learn, to grow, and no preconceived ideas of, this is where this is going and I don't want to hear this, but I do want to hear that. Mm-hmm. They also come to every meeting with an agenda and an objective, because it's there. They have to take ownership for this relationship. Mm-hmm. And for me, the real passion I get out of being a mentor is seeing the way some of those great superstars that I've had the privilege to work with, how they start paying it forward. So a little bit of that sort of a pyramid effect. I would, if I had my way, I would mentor 30,000 people, and I realise that's never going to be possible. But if every person I mentor then goes off and shares some of what I've shown them or some of the tools they've gained for other people, we start making a big difference.
Okay. And to flip that a little bit, when you hear about discourse around mentorship, there's a lot more talk, you know, with the prevalence of Lean In and kind of more the conversations about how to excel in your career. People say a good mentor prepares you to be attractive to a great sponsor. What is a sponsor? And is it true that mentorship and sponsorship are linked to each other?
So mentors and sponsors have very, very different roles. It may be that your mentor also becomes your sponsor over time. But I think one of the mistakes would be to go into mentorship thinking the only objective is for them to help you get sponsored, because that's not always going to be the objective. So going back to your question on the differences, as I said, I see a mentor very much as that critical friend that you are bringing real life issues, challenges, etc. to, and they're helping you grow, overcome those. A sponsor is, and the way I always describe it is, that person that is representing you when you're not there. They're that person that makes you visible in a room, even if 10 people in that room have never seen you, heard you, know who you are. Because the way the world works, and I think it's true across most sectors, is we all get spoken about when we're not there in good and bad ways. So the key is to have as many people in as many different rooms having that knowledge and ability to talk about you in any situation.
It's like your own personal team of kind of cheerleaders that are powerful.
Exactly. And again, it's, I think there's a myth of they have to be majorly senior people and a sponsor is of no use unless they're very senior. There are conversations that go on, and as you know, and I think the millennial generation is probably even more so, people move around so quickly. Some people's careers rocket in one way, people that you worked alongside and your peers 1 year could now be in completely different areas. So it's not just about having those sponsors that are six levels above you that are talking at boards about you. It's also having a broad range of people that have enough information about you, your aspirations, your future plans, to be able to have those conversations if something comes up.
And so on the myth busting level as well, one of the key things that comes up a lot with sponsorship is people talk about, you know, people who want to get into the C-suite need to have sponsors. So is getting a sponsor something that you need to worry about when you're much more senior in your career, or is are there practical steps we can take to build that team from day one?
I definitely believe that it's not just about when you're ready to go in the C-suite and therefore don't worry about it for the next 10 years and run along. There's lots you can do from day one to begin to build that network of supporters that aren't necessarily from day one your sponsor, but they begin to see your growth and your progress and learn about who you are. So when I look back over my career, some of my most influential sponsors have been people that I worked with and knew me really early on in my career. And 10, 15 years later, they became a sponsor without me really knowing it.
Mm-hmm.
And the mistake is, if you wait until you're too senior, it's a lot harder to build that history and that broader knowledge of you as a person.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And so what would you advise for us to practically do to kind of build our network and plug into different networks from the start of our careers?
So I have this really simple, and I am a bit of a control freak for those that don't know me.
Aren't we all?
And I always share with all of my mentees and the people I sponsor a really simple stakeholder map,
okay,
which is basically three rings. In the middle, you have the people you deal with really frequently. You are in meetings with them every week. You interact with them maybe on a monthly basis, but you're constantly involved with them. A middle ring of those that you have regular contact with, but it's less frequent. So it may be you go to a quarterly meeting that they're at, or you have to send a report out that they get every quarter.
Mm.
And then your outer ring is normally more senior people, and they're people that you have no regular interaction with, but maybe you CC them in on one of those reports you send.
Okay.
And once you've done that, it's then having that strategy for each set. So that middle group, really build a deeper relationship with that inner ring. Learn a bit about them personally. It's not all about work. Understand who they are, do they have a family? Where do they live? What do they like doing? Just so you've got some common talking points when you meet. Maybe use them as sounding boards for ideas outside of your day-to-day piece. You'll get to know the people that actually have their ideas and values resonate with you, or they actually challenge you really well. So use them as much as you can. Then that middle ring, make that conscious effort to speak to them more than you would normally. So pick up the phone rather than send an email once a month. Just have more of a contact with them.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you read an article that you think they may be interested. Ping it across to them on email, and again, then have something to talk about next time you meet.
Mm-hmm.
And that outside group, even set it as an objective that one or two of them you will reach out to each year.
Okay.
Just pick up the phone, send an email, ask them for a coffee.
Mm-hmm.
That will seem like the scariest thing you have ever done in your life when you first do it. But once you've done it once and you realise, I say this to everyone, in all the times I have done that, and some of the people I do it to are really, really, really senior,
mm-hmm.
and I still get really, really scared sometimes. but 99.9% of them will say yes or not now, but in a month's time.
Mm-hmm.
Because most people really love talking about themselves. So that opportunity for someone who says, would you have a coffee and tell me about your career? Most people go, oh, brilliant, someone wants to listen to me. So although it seems scary, and if you keep that stakeholder map active and relevant when you move to it, and you just do that one thing and every year you review it, you'll be shocked how quickly that network starts increasing. And there'll be people that you do that with and it doesn't continue.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be people that maybe even in that outer ring that you just click with, and they may become a mentor. They may naturally become a sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit of a numbers game. the more people you connect with, the more you're likely to reach those people that become those real influencers as you go forward.
So it's about making it your business to make sure that the conversation continues with all the people in your kind of circle and beyond.
Exactly. And that's a really good point, because it is about nurturing that relationship as well. Mm-hmm. Because we all know, we've all got those friends that the only time they speak to us is when they need us to do something for them.
Or when Facebook tells them it's their birthday.
That's yeah. That too. And they're the ones that annoy us most. Mm. And having work relationships is no different, really. Mm-hmm. My assistant will try to shut my door, my office door, 100 times a day, because I have an open door policy, which apparently is too open and it should be mini closed. And so I will do anything for anybody and give as much of my time as I possibly can, because my view is that's part of the responsibility of my position now. So if it means I have to start work at 7 o'clock at night because I've spoken to people all day, I don't see that as a bad thing. Mm-hmm. But what does grate on me is when people only ever pick up the phone because they want something. Mm-hmm. So that's no different for anybody. So make sure that you don't, with that network, you are reaching out to them other than when you want something, because then when you really do need them, they will drop everything and be there for you.
Yeah, no, for sure. I 100% agree. And so when you look back, Melanie, at, you know, your career, what key three pieces of advice that you would give yourself if you were to start again today?
So my first one would be, it's not all about the destination. The journey is actually more important. Mm-hmm. So I think we all go into our careers, or a lot of us go into our careers, with a very clear view of where we want to get to. Mm-hmm. And what that can sometimes do is close your eyes to all the opportunities around you. And when you look at most senior people's careers, they haven't been that one-way route march from A to Z. Mm. They have, and I look at my own career, I've taken some big risks. I've embraced challenges that people have told me I would be ridiculously mad to even think about doing. Mm. I've taken sideways moves that nobody understood. But all of those things have shaped who I am today and what I do. And if you go into your career with, I'm only going there, you become very blinkered. Mm-hmm. And you do miss some of those opportunities.
Okay.
My second one would be, and this is where my control freak perfectionist comes in, is asking for help isn't a sign of weakness. Mm-hmm. I always believed that if I worked really, really hard, I could achieve anything. And if I wasn't achieving what I thought I needed to or should have done by a certain time, it was obviously because I wasn't working hard enough, or I needed to learn more, et cetera, et cetera. Once I realised that actually, if I ask somebody else for help on this, they're not going to look at that as a sign of weakness. It's really going to be 1 + 1 = 3. And it's not a failure to ask. The world gets so much easier. And my last one, which is more of a broader, is you can't have it all of the time. I think, especially as women, and especially control freak perfectionist women, we do think that we can have it all and we should be able to juggle 37 balls at all times and be the best in all of those hats we put on.
Yeah.
But life is about compromises. And as your career progresses and your life changes, your priorities change. And it's not a sign of failure if at certain points something gets more priority than something else. Mm-hmm. And you make those compromises as you go along. And at different phases, you will be able to achieve at certain times, yeah, you can juggle 37 balls and do a really good job at it. Other times you might only be able to keep two up. But that's not that you're doing a bad thing. It's those two are really important at that particular point in time. And if you tried to keep all 37 up, you would achieve nothing and probably drop them all. So don't feel that you have to have it all of the time. When you look back, and I look back and I think, yeah, I did have it all and I have got it all, but not at each stage in my life did I manage to have it all the time and all right.
Okay. So in summary, it's about the journey, it's asking for help, and it's realizing you can't do it all the time. So thank you so much for that, Melanie. And if people wanted to get in touch with you or with any of the organizations you work with, how do they do that?
Please feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn and connect with me that way. I can also be contacted via WIBF, and you can also contact me via the WIBF website. And I'd love to hear from people and hear about how you're all getting on.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much, Melanie.
That's okay. Thank you.
And as always, thank you guys for listening in. You can find out more information about this episode and other resources on www.makemeapro.org. I have got some very special surprises for you this week. You can hear more of the podcast as well by searching on iTunes, SoundCloud, or connecting via Facebook. And if you want to get in touch with me directly, you can follow me on Twitter at Miss Minday or give me a Google on LinkedIn. Until next time, guys.